Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This episode of the show is, of course, a recap of episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance. This week, I am joined again by my buddy, Nate Noling, one-third of the Gilcast, Sammy Reed, not with us today, Peter Overzet, not with us today. Not sure what we're doing for guests next week, but of course, all of us are enjoying watching The Last Dance on ESPN on Sunday nights. Every week, we are doing these recap episodes. I thought episode 6 in particular was probably the best episode that has been done in the series yet, as some of the gambling stories were great. So dug into some of these stories with Nate Noling, kind of recapped it, chatted about it. Hope you guys enjoy it. If you want to support the show, you can subscribe to patreon.com/takecast, get some bonus episodes, support the show. You can also just leave a rating and review on iTunes. That's very useful. That's very helpful. Or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming Nate Noling into the show as we continue our recap of The Last Dance, episodes 5 and 6. Had Peter Overzet on the show last week. He was still hungover from doing his Periscope on Saturday night, where him and Leone drank. I think they each had like 3 glasses of wine, you know, and that was just that.
That was too much.
Peter told me Peter told me his wife texted him in the middle of it and said, "You are so annoying," which is. When you're in your office streaming something for fantasy football, that's exactly what you want to hear from your significant other. Not that anyone has ever thought I've been annoying on a show or anything before. So, you know, it's all good. So episodes 5 and 6 started off with the very heavy note of, because I was wondering when Kobe was going to come in, and they led off episode 5 with dedicated to Kobe, and then they had him talking a little bit about his relationship with Michael. So that was a heavy start. It was an interesting editorial decision to start off 2 hours of episodes with that, I thought.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit weird. Like, we couldn't even get into and hype and then, like, have it come in. So it actually did set a weird tone for the rest of the episode. Like, it took me a little bit. I was almost, like, coming down emotionally from all that of just, like, the Kobe stuff again. Before I could get into the show, which I thought was dumb, but
I thought that episode 9, I thought there would be 15 minutes on Kobe, right? I thought they would do Kobe and they, you know, because they have more Kobe footage. I mean, clearly they shot a whole interview with him, and they would just do a whole Kobe and Michael thing. Like, it was only, what, like 5 minutes maybe?
That's what felt so weird, is like you went to that well, which obviously is going to be an emotional, like, emotional spigot, but then you only go there for 5 minutes and don't allow anybody to actually, like, process through the journey or anything. So it was a bizarre choice. Like, I'm surprised they didn't go there for longer if they were going to go there. And why go there if you're not going to go there? Like, they have to do more on Kobe, right? Episode 9 or 10 has to.
Yeah, I mean, and I, so we know that episode 7 is going to be the retirement episode. And then, you know what? I don't even know who the Bulls played in the 98 playoffs other than the Jazz. So there's going to be a bunch of stuff in episodes 8 and 9 that I don't know about at all. Right? I wasn't watching the 1998 playoffs. I have no idea how, if the Bulls faced any, you know, if it was just hard at all for them to even get to the finals, or if they just steamrolled through.
Yeah, and they also have to get into his dad's passing.
Yeah,
as well, which we are, like, chronologically right there after, because that was,
yeah, it's going to be so. Passing, and then the retirement is coming up, and that's going to be the next 2 episodes, so a majority of it, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, it's weird. They went straight from Kobe to the Jordans, right? They started talking about the shoes. So one of the things that was funny was Adidas. So you probably don't even care about shoes, but like I don't care about shoes.
But I did back in the day.
Like the Adidas just always taking these losses, just over and over taking these losses with shoes is, I mean, it's hilarious. Like, Steph Curry wears Under Armour shoes, dude. Like, it is so funny. Yeah.
And to hear him say, like, "Oh, I wanted Adidas.
I wanted sure. Adidas." Yeah.
Is like, can you imagine how much different those two companies would look? Like, based on that. Ah, it's just, it's hilarious to me.
And then Justin Timberlake lying and saying that he used to have to save up to buy Air Jordans when he was like he was a child celebrity. He got whatever Jordans he wanted whenever he wanted. I actually only own one pair of Jordans and they are so ugly. They don't really work on me. I'm not tall enough. It's not a good look.
No, some people can pull it off. Some people can't, but
yeah. So we get into some real basketball and we get the shrug game with Michael being like, look, I respect Clyde. I think he's a threat, but which is like, that's how he talks about everyone. He's like, yeah, they were good, but, and Clyde Drexler, by the way, has the hairline of like a 57-year-old in those clips. Like how old was he during that series?
That was my thing. This almost sounds made up. Like nobody in their right mind could have talked about Drexler and Jordan on the same, like nobody could have on the same plane. Like they were so clearly different players that like, it almost sounds like Jordan had to manufacture this, like this narrative to pump himself up. Like there's no way.
I mean, Clyde was good, but NBA he wasn't like about this. It looks like Clyde had three seasons where he averaged 25 or more points. One of them was that 91-92 season where that game took place during the second run to the finals for the Bulls. I mean, he was 29. I don't know. I agree. That sounds like Michael, you know, just being Michael.
Yeah, I agree. I think he made that up.
Yeah, because I don't know. Like, was Clyde Drexler even historically, like, is he one of the 100 best players ever?
I don't know. Like, 100's quite large. So, I mean, he might be. But, like,
I mean, he was not even considered one of the if you're not considered one of the 11th best players, the only reason people like that series is because of the shrugging, that's the only reason why anyone remembers it. And by the way, Magic Johnson, great storyteller, very good storyteller in this documentary.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's so many players back then. Like I think of Magic and Michael as just such like charismatic guys that like anything they do is engaging to watch and just watch and listen to them talk, where it's like, I don't know. I think that's such a part of their legacy. It's just when I look at like Larry Bird, I'm like, I really don't really want to hear you talk, or like even Barkley, you know, where it's like Magic and MJ were just so smooth in everything they did.
I don't really want to hear Barkley talk because it'll always just be him lying, right? He just because so this is actually a great moment. The last part of episode 6 is that Sun series where the Bulls win the finals in 6 games, and Barkley just goes, you know, I don't mind losing to Michael. And you just know every day he wakes up and he just curses Michael Jordan's name. You know he does 100% mind losing to Michael.
I don't know. There is some like competitive thing where if you put up, what did he put up? 32, 11, and 10. In that game, like he played the best game he possibly could have, and Michael outdid him with 52-8-6 or something, and he just loses. If you as a competitor leave your best on the floor and you still get dominated, I do think there is honor in just going, okay, this is the best to ever play. And Barkley still talks about that. Barkley always has said LeBron is not MJ. MJ is the – so I actually do believe Barkley does – In viewing his own greatness higher than he does, he also views MJ as just the best.
Well, because if MJ is not the best, right? If MJ is not the best to ever do it, that diminishes Barkley's accomplishments because he could never beat him, right? Yeah, so that's a pretty big part of it. So the dream team practices are, I mean, just amazing. And I thought first of all, MJ seems like. Like, I get why his teammates would not have liked him if that was his attitude during the practices. Like, you ever played pickup basketball with a dude who takes the rebound and then just goes coast to coast? And even if he scores, you're like, great, great, good, thanks, man. This is really fun to play with you right now. Like, that's Michael all the time.
All the time. And he just doesn't have an off switch. He just sounds like that level of intensity. I don't think humans understand, and it's just exhausting. Like, that has to be the worst to put up with day in and day out.
And Michael Magic Johnson's recall was amazing, because when he was, it's not like he was watching those practices when they were interviewing him, and he remembers practices from 30 years ago. He remembered the order of shots that Michael took. He was like, oh, he made the three from the top of the key, then he made one from the corner, then he did the, then he went coast to coast. And I'm thinking like, dude, I don't remember what I had for lunch. Yeah,
he pulled a Sean McVay and remembered something like that. And it's like, this is nuts. The fact that a Hall of Famer can remember a practice to this level of detail. And just to think, like, being around, that was that memorable for one of those guys. I don't know. I thought that was one of the coolest parts of the episode.
Larry Bird and Magic Johnson complaining that MJ gets all the calls, which, by the way, I mean, I don't know, but you have to imagine MJ did just get a ridiculous amount of calls, right?
But when you look at, like, the amount of – when you looked at Michael's stats, like, he would have games where the Bulls would shoot, like, 8 free throws the entire game, and he'd put up 50 points. And I think that's what's different about today versus back then, is, like, there would be, like, quarters where there'd be 2 foul shots taken in a game. Like, the refs did not blow whistles nearly as much as they do today. So I don't know. I think the way that we think about Michael –
Well, let's look this up. Okay, so per game stats, 1998, so the final Bulls season, how many free throw attempts per game do you think the Bulls took, and how many free throw attempts per game do you think that Michael took?
Did Michael have – was it double digits? Did he average 10 a game?
No, mm-mm. Which is surprising. He did in 2 seasons. So the last 2 Doug Collins years, 86, 87, 87, 88, Michael averaged double-digit free throw attempts, and those were the only years he did.
Wow. See, that's pretty crazy. I mean, there's been seasons for LeBron where it was – I mean, in today's day and age, I feel like if you drove as much as Michael drove and not to get free throws, that'd be surprising.
So actually this is sort of interesting. So 2019-20, so the season that's on, that is postponed right now, the team that takes the most free throws per game is the Clippers and the Rockets at a shade over 26. Looking back at 1998, there are 11 teams that all, well, 13 16 teams that all take 26 or more free throw attempts per game, because you got to remember there were so many possessions where guys were trying to get into the paint. Like, the games were lower scoring then, but no one was taking threes and everyone was always trying to get to the rim because no one could shoot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. But the Michael or Magic at practice being like, oh, the refs just came here from Chicago. It's like, we're playing in Chicago right now. That was really funny. And I guarantee that got under Michael's skin too, because that was crediting part of his success to someone else.
My other favorite moment was the watching the security guards play with Michael before the game.
I mean, this man has such a crippling gambling addiction.
No, it's a competition problem.
It's a competition problem. Well, the moment of the documentary that everyone remembers is the security guard, John Wozniak, who's playing the flipping quarters game with Michael. Literally, he does the Jordan shrug to him. Yeah. Like, just imagine it.
Yeah, I love watching this with my wife because she doesn't know anything about basketball or sports or anything. And she's watching this and is like, so Michael Jordan's just playing with a random security? And I said, yeah, he was that, like, driven and like, competitive that he would just play with anybody, you know? And he just had this desire to beat anybody equally. That's why I love, like, just hearing the stories of he'd go from the back of the bus to the front of the bus, play for thousands of dollars, play for a single.
Yeah, the $1 blackjack hands.
I want to beat anybody. I want to beat the security guard. I want to beat the highest played players in the game. I just want to win.
What did you think about the Kukoc stuff? I you know what? I think a lot of this stuff about MJ is hilarious. And, you know, it's like, I don't admire the sociopathy, but I at least understand where it comes from. I actually thought they just were, like, just being mean to this dude for no reason.
No, I get it. I mean, when you're slighted like that by Jerry Krause, and like you, he took all of his hatred for Krause out on this guy. And I get it. Like Jordan's competitiveness, it's almost like a disorder, but at least it's consistent. And it makes sense. I mean, yeah, when you can't turn it off, you can't turn it off. So I don't know. I wasn't surprised about it. I mean, I do think the Kukoc story is interesting to just hear about, like, so many people like that we don't remember that way, and just thinking through like the war torn country of like in basketball, like how all we think of Tony Kukoc is just basketball and just this like international player, you know.
And that he was a second round pick. You know, you keep looking at all these guys. I mean, we talk about the Warriors running hot. I mean, Pippen was the 17th pick, I think. And they acquired Rodman for like nothing, right? Like he was with the Spurs, and it just like the Spurs just didn't want him, so they got him for nothing. They get Kukoc for a second round pick. Ron Harper was a huge part of those teams, and I'm pretty sure that they acquired him for, you know, just like a really low compensation package because he had gotten injured. I don't know. Where do we think Horace Grant was drafted? Who was like, by the way, Horace Grant, a dude who unfairly maligned. It was Phil Jackson who was the source for Jordan rules. Everyone knows this now.
Everyone knows it too.
And it gets pinned on Horace Grant, who's just like, bro, it was not me.
Yeah. Horace Grant, when was he drafted?
He was first round 10th pick overall, 1987. So a little bit of, you know, they sucked, right? When MJ just used the ball every possession, they weren't any good. So they were able to draft Horace. They fired Doug Collins. They bring Phil Jackson in, and all of a sudden, boom, he's got Horace Grant there, who is a guy who, you know, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame and played for, until he was 38. He played for a long time. He was really very good player for a long time.
And that's, again, I know we talked about it last time we were on, but like all of these things just go to why I think Krause doesn't get a fair shake. I mean, a lot of what he did wasn't just like put Michael on the court and let him win. There was a lot of moves behind the scene that like it was not normal to build a team around a two guard, and Krause did it at a time when nobody thought it was possible, and Krause did it. So like, I don't know. I still hate how they like dunk on this.
It keeps happening too, because every episode Michael will just be dunking on him. But you can't have a cigar. You can't have a cigar, Jerry. It'll stunt your growth. You know what's even better is that people who are not even involved in the making of this documentary are catching strays. Michael's on the phone in the car, and he's complaining about having to wear the Reebok stuff, and he's like complaining about like, you know, some assistant with US basketball or something, Harry Schiffler. And it's just like, how many people did Michael hate? I mean, how many people does Michael Jordan hate? It's more people than I know, probably, that I've met in my life.
It is, yeah, for sure. And I love how he'll never let go on these grudges. Like, he's going to take this Isaiah thing to the grave, you know? And I just love watching that.
I met all the criteria to be on the team, Isaiah Thomas says. And and I, you know, here's an annoying thing, though, is Michael doesn't take the credit for it. Michael doesn't say, yeah, I didn't want to play with him. He says it wasn't me. You know, that's lame. Like, if you block the guy out, Michael, you got to take the credit.
Well, that's where I don't know if it was just Michael then. Like, Michael seems to have enough self-awareness of, like, especially years later, like, if he does something, I feel like he owns up to it nowadays. Like, obviously he didn't, you know, when you watch these social media interviews that would have gone viral on social media if that was around back then, after the Atlantic City thing. What are you talking about? I was just out till 12:30. Oh, we were back at the hotel by midnight.
Here's the thing, though. I'm not sure how viral that stuff goes, because like Harden and Westbrook and those guys, like, they like, well, Harden goes to strip clubs, but like Westbrook plays cards all the time. Like, he'll just go out and go play cards at a casino if he feels like it. And that, like, I have like cousins and stuff who've seen him out, and it never gets that big.
Well, Westbrook is a very different player than like LeBron or Michael. Michael's literally the guy that everybody in the world looked up to. He was the face of NBA basketball. It would be, it'd be similar to like the pressure that Curry or LeBron is under. I don't think Westbrook's even.
How dare you?
Like, I get it. People from Oklahoma and people from like wherever, but like, don't compare Westbrook to the fame that Mike had.
Seinfeld in the locker room. This one's not going to work. That was, I mean, if you think about it, when I think about the 90s, I literally think of Jerry Seinfeld and Michael Jordan. Like, the, like those were probably the two most famous people in the 1990s, right? Like, the biggest TV show, and then Michael was, like, the biggest celebrity, which is really funny. I wonder if they ever, like, did a show or anything together. That would be very interesting to get those two dudes in a room.
I think Oprah did something with them. I feel like I remember that.
So the Jordan Rules books, it comes out. Horace gets blamed for it. And, I mean, I feel like nothing in that book was even really untrue or that upsetting. Like, I feel like Phil sort of – and, you know, I guess Horace Grant, if we're – that's what the documentary says, that it's Horace Grant, but it wasn't. It wasn't really Horace Grant. I feel like it kind of worked.
Horace too. It could have been Horace too. It could have been – like, I would say Michael knows enough to know, like – I'm guessing he said something only to Horace that only Horace could have said that made Michael know it was Horace. I'm sure it was Phil and Horace and other people. It wasn't just one or two sources.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably true. So,
but Sam Smith, I don't know that. I just, the whole idea of like making your career off of something like that, of like taking down one of the greatest that Chicago was gifted, is just stupid. I just hate how reporters have to do that.
I'm team Sam Smith. You get the story, you write the book. I mean, he probably never even thought, like, he probably thought when he was writing the book, like, oh, I'll write a book about the Bulls. I'll get some good inside stuff, and it'll sell just because Jordan is popular. And, I mean, it, you know, it took off, right? Jordan Rules was a big book for a long time.
Yeah.
So, good for him, you know. I'm sure Michael was really mean to him at games for a long time whenever he saw him. I'm sure Michael did not appreciate any of that. So, no. All right. Great, great moment. And this was a very underrated moment. This was when they were in Barcelona. So you're an Olympian, right? You are the highest pinnacle of your sport. You're one of the best in the world. You're one of the 10 best in your country. And you are so good at that sport that you consciously are bringing your golf clubs so you can go play another sport for money when you are traveling to go compete for your country in that given sport. Like that was a wild moment to think of, like, that's how good Michael is. Like, he literally doesn't care. He's going to go golf right now.
No care.
Guy's a goat.
He does what he does.
All of them drinking Miller Lights at the end of the game. At the end of the game, and then Michael saying, "Oh, when I was a rookie, we used to smoke cigarettes at halftime." that would lead me to believe maybe LeBron could have been a little bit more competitive back then.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear of, like, I mean, Michael was literally joking and saying, "Oh, they would go through cases of beer at halftime." You know, I mean, I just wonder what NBA locker rooms look like.
I mean, I'm sure it was a lot like what football locker room like. Yeah, there was a lot of money back then, but it was kind of like a blue-collar job to be a professional athlete. Like, it was like a labor-intensive job, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you were doing physical labor as a professional athlete. Like, it was not at all like it was set up today.
Yeah, for sure. I loved hearing the Jordan shoe, like, bleeding and him not wanting to take his shoes off at halftime.
He's like, I'm having a great game. I can't take it off.
Can't take it off.
I think one of the things that made Michael such a success was he, like, realized the symbolism and stuff like that. Like, yeah. he realized, like, oh, this will be a great story for me to tell someday of me playing my last game at MSG and wearing my first shoe ever, which, by the way, like, Jordans are not even that comfortable of shoes anyway. So, tough scene. Yeah.
He's a marketing genius.
Him owning Patrick Ewing after that game. like Ewing being like, dude, don't even start with me. I mean, how much did the Knicks hate him? How much did every player on the Knicks absolutely hate that guy?
I mean, how many people hated him overall? I mean, you had the Celtics, you had the Pistons, you had the Knicks. I mean, every good player just hated him.
I gotta say though, that play where the Knicks could have beaten the Bulls in that series. I mean, Charles Smith got fouled like 900 times on that play, roughly.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, they didn't call fouls back then. That's why, how many videos have you seen of MJ just getting destroyed in the paint and no foul, you know? Where today, I feel like all those would be and ones, you know?
I mean, yeah, anytime you go over someone's back for anything, blocking, rebounding, it doesn't matter. Like, that's a whistle. That's a foul.
Yeah.
I mean, so granted, I think LeBron would own all of these guys because he was, like, as big as a center was back then. I'll give the Curry haters something, which is that I think Curry would have been playing John Paxson's role in 1990. You know what I mean? Because he just was not big enough and strong enough to do this. Like, no. Maybe you get called for a ton of fouls, but like they're gonna keep fouling you.
Yeah, and there's just the way the game was played, it wouldn't have worked. Like, he would have been the John Paxson, like, all year. Waiting for getting the ball that one time when nobody's on you to hit that one shot.
And John Paxson, you know, you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. He bought himself what, good 15 years of goodwill with Bulls fans, and it's all evaporated now.
It's all gone. Yeah.
Well, isn't he replaced now? Isn't he not with the team? Or Gar is gone now?
So Gar is gone, but Gar Pax are one in the same, and Paxson has done everything he can to try to separate him from Gar, but Gar's gone, and now Pax is still around as like a special advisor or whatever, and he claims he'll leave as soon as he's asked, but Pax needs to be gone as well. He's still around, just not in an official. It's dumb.
Sad state for the Bulls.
I mean, since early night, I mean, the Bulls have just done everything wrong since the, you know, mid-90s to, I mean, it's been 20 years of just terrible decision-making as an organization.
Well, they got unlucky when their young MVP player was not healthy, right? Ruined his knees.
Well, I mean, Jay Williams was the early – what was that? When did the Jay Williams accident happen?
I feel like I know the answer to that. I don't know, though.
Jay Williams thing was obviously some bad luck. Obviously, the D. Rose thing was some bad luck. But they've also made some terrible decisions. So,
well, didn't they trade multiple top 10 picks for Tyus Thomas?
Yes.
Including one of them that was LaMarcus Aldridge, right?
Yes. And then we gave up for Doug McDermott. I mean, we gave up it was Gary Harris, the picks that became Gary Harris and Jokic. Who was it? Nurkic.
No, they also gave up the pick that became Jokic, the second round pick that became Jokic.
I think it was Harris and Nurkic, I think, were the two picks that we gave up to get McDermott. Yeah, I mean, we just made some terrible, terrible decisions.
Dougie McBuckets.
Yeah, it's been terrible. That was Paxson. That was Paxson through and through. Paxson loved McDermott.
I mean, McDermott was just a John Paxson-ass style player for sure. Yeah,
it's just terrible.
So the thing that everyone wants to talk about from the documentaries is the gambling. So we get a little bit of it. We get not a ton of it because there is more to the Jordan gambling stuff than what we got last night, and there's more they can come back to. So what we get the security guard stuff, which was hilarious, big high point of the documentary. We get a little bit of the golfing and a little bit of the the homicidal competitiveness, but the interviews when people realized that Michael Jordan was a gambling addict were hilarious because he's so standoffish and you can tell he doesn't want to talk about it at all. The interview in the glasses. With Ahmad Rashad.
So good.
Which, by the way, imagine being a reporter, like it's your job to report on the NBA, and Michael comes to you and is like, hey, dude, do you want to do an interview real quick about my gambling addiction? It's like, that's like a career-defining moment for Ahmad Rashad.
I'm only going to do it with you. You're the only one in the media I want to talk to, but I'm not going to take my sunglasses off.
I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem with my sunglasses on.
And I love what he was stating. I'm like, I would lose my house. I wouldn't be married. I wouldn't have my kids. I wouldn't have, you know, and it's like, dude, you are so in like that is
like you are richer than God.
Yeah, that is not something a healthy person who doesn't have a problem. So everything he says is the exact like if you wrote a script of like proof that you have a gambling problem.
He literally said I could stop anytime I want. He went on national TV. This probably aired on NBC. Probably 12 million people watched this interview. And he goes, I can stop anytime I want. It's just, it's a hobby. It's a hobby.
Do you think if MJ was around in today that, like, Adam
wouldn't work, man. His team.
MJ would find him a way out.
Adam Silver or the team. And I think the far more likely scenario is that if Michael Jordan was born in 1992, he would never make his way to basketball because he would just be like playing online poker or addicted to FanDuel.
Yeah, gambling would have ruined him.
I mean, it is – so a disappointing thing is that, you know, Michael Jordan clearly has a huge hand in producing this documentary. So we don't really get, like, who introduced Michael to golf, who introduced Mike to cards, who was the first game that Mike played, like – did Mike ever lose a bunch of money playing cards when he was a rookie and didn't have very much money? Because we get like, oh, here's the kid at University of North Carolina who's like doing his own laundry. And then we get Michael drinking cognac and smoking a cigar and being like, yeah, I hate Isaiah Thomas. Like we didn't get a ton of the transition of Michael from like normal kid to most popular athlete on earth.
Yeah. And we also got like Michael's version of that whole court case, which was like, I don't know if we'll ever know the truth about that, but like, I don't believe the Michael side of that story for sure. There's more to that, you know, to that than we know of. So hearing all of it just from Jordan's perspective isn't a super fair way to take that in for sure.
And this guy, Slim Buhler. If this was, let me tell you, if it came out that LeBron or Durant owed like $500,000 to a guy who later was arrested on like drug trafficking charges, that would be a bigger story than it was back then. I think like it would have been massive.
Yeah. I mean, it was claimed that it was a $1.25 million debt that Jordan settled for like $300,000. I mean, there was actually $300,000 that transferred hands from Jordan to this like convict.
And it was probably all in cash.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's crazy.
Do we think, like, what do we think Jordan, like how good at golf was he? Do we think?
I have no idea what, I mean,
I guess you don't, yeah, you don't golf, yeah, really.
No. I don't golf, but I have no idea what his part.
So
what would you say?
So I asked this question on Twitter and someone sent me his handicap card from 2013 from the official USGA. And
2013, though, we don't like, I want to know in like the '90s when he was,
well,
really playing.
1.9 was his handicap index in 2013 after he had retired and was no longer like, probably Michael Jordan probably has not lifted a weight since he retired basketball would be my guess, right? Just doesn't, seems like he would rather drink and gamble. Yeah,
looking
and
at those interviews, I would agree.
So that basically means that he was a top 0.01% golfer in the world after he had stopped training and caring about being in shape. So I would imagine he had to have been pretty close to a scratch golfer, which is like he could go on a PGA course and maybe shoot like 4 over for 2 days, right? Like good enough to be like, he could go play with a pro golfer and not embarrass himself basically, which is absurd to be that good at another sport while also, you know, being the best in the world at another sport.
The fact that he was able to go play baseball, like even though it was only double A, is still like,
well, he was not good at baseball.
Yeah, but I mean, even double A, if you can get like his walk rate, I mean, everything he did in baseball is still insane to me that he was able to just leave and go do that.
I mean, even being able to go and play double A after. I mean, Michael probably had not played baseball in 20 years. I don't know. Like, probably since he was in high school.
Even though he wasn't good from like a major league standpoint in baseball, double A is still like the top 0.0001% of athletes in the world who dedicated their life to play baseball. And Michael was able to do that in his spare time after he retired and still was able to like perform. Like, that's insane to me.
Yeah. I think the guy that I like the most, the biggest winner of these documentaries for me, is Pippen. Just everything Pippen says, everything he does, I'm just like, this guy's really got it all figured out. I like Scottie Pippen.
There's got to be another side to the Pippen thing, though, that we just don't hear about. Because, like, he wasn't, like, loved by – I mean, right now he's not a part of the Bulls anymore. He wanted to be a part of the Bulls. He came on as an advisor. Now he's out again. He hasn't really found, like, great footing in the NBA, like, afterwards, even though he seems like he'd be, like, the perennial teammate, the perfect guy, just soft-spoken. So what
– Well, I mean, you know, he –
What is it about Pippen that isn't like, because he should be like one of the top celebrated, I mean, he's a top 50 player of all time.
I mean, you know, he's from a small town in Arkansas, went to a double A, like a D2 school.
Yeah, it wasn't even NCAA.
Like, probably that's the highest level of education he ever got. Like, I don't know, he speaks a different language than front office guys do. You know what I mean? Like, it just, he's a different person, has different life experiences and stuff than a lot of those people. And that's like, that's a hard bridge to gap for people, I think.
Yeah. Do you think the documentary is going to explore any of the gambling conspiracies with his first retirement?
No, because I mean, one, it's been basically like debunked. But Michael's in charge. Like, Michael is letting, like, we are 6 episodes in and Michael's children have not been mentioned yet. Michael during all of this had was married and had 2 children, Marcus and Jeffrey, I believe. Yeah. With his and Michael Jordan Jr., I believe, all with his first wife. And these kids are not in this documentary.
Not at all.
So not, yeah, I mean, because that's not what, you know, Michael is like a great athlete and a funny guy, but he's not a good person.
You know? And I even think the political side of things that came out yesterday was a little, like, I was surprised.
I mean, LeBron would never, dude. Republicans don't buy shoes. Like, Republicans buy shoes, too, is like, that is the biggest cowardly, I mean, that's just cowardly shit to me.
Sam Smith said it was a joke, and I get, like, I do think that at that time, athletes weren't political spokesperson. Like,
yeah, other than Muhammad Ali, really, probably. Yeah.
So, like, athletes weren't the same. They weren't under the same pressure that they are today. So, I get, like, Michael saying something like that in jest. But, like, yeah, the political pressure that these guys are under and just, like, the life pressure came through a little bit yesterday, which I think was good. But
and,
yeah,
I mean, good on him for at least addressing it in this. You know, I kind of thought
documentary without Michael producing it, though,
be a lot different. I think, yeah, I think it'd be a lot different. I think there'd be a lot more people who had less kind things to say, probably.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, we were never going to get what we really wanted, which was Michael talking about all, you know, this 20, 30 year old stuff without his say so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what?
Really private person, and I think that's the weird thing that comes out for like such an athlete who wanted so much fame, got it, and then yeah, he's actually a very private guy.
Well, the thing that he wanted was money, right? Like, he's a guy who really enjoyed making his money, so yeah. I think he viewed fame as like a byproduct of that, basically. So, I don't know. I did see someone say something interesting, which was that we can complain about how Michael has had a hand in all of this stuff. But I mean, imagine how much LeBron is going to be manicuring absolutely everything, because eventually there will be a LeBron documentary that gets made similar to this, where it's, you know, we go back to his rookie year and all the guys he played with and everyone is interviewed and, you know, all his head coaches and Dan Gilbert and so on and so forth. And
except
I mean,
it's not going to be good. It's not going to be a documentary that I want to watch. Like, it's going to be, I don't know.
No, it's going to be like a YouTube video, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be anything that is interesting.
It's going to be like that barbershop thing where we hear LeBron, like, all these deep political conversation or society and just like, I mean, those overproduced, like, this is.
Yeah, it's going to, that's a good word for it. It is just, it's going to be mega, mega overproduced. That's a good way to view it. Yeah.
And LeBron wants himself to be a thought leader, like a society, like this super deep thinker. And I'm sure he is, but at the same time, like, he also is very controlling of the face that he puts out into the public.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen him have to take, like, I guess a fair point was, I mean, LeBron would never say something as lame as Republicans buy sneakers to.
Yeah.
He would never say something that lame, but he has had to at times say things. And then clearly the NBA has been like, you got to walk that back. Because with the China thing, he was like, oh, I spoke at a turn. Exactly. Which is like, I mean, yeah, you probably did, but it's worse. I think it's worse to say the thing and back it up.
It is, because it shows that your words don't match with, like, your values. And it allows people to not trust you. So.
But, I mean, that guy Jesse Helms, dude, what a piece of shit. Right?
Yes.
Like, I can't believe, I mean, I can't believe, even as an apolitical person, I can't believe that, I mean, the thing is Jordan probably just didn't even know. Like, he probably, like, literally had never heard of that guy ever. And I imagine if someone would have been like, oh, this is what this dude is about. Like, Michael's mom was like, look, you gotta do something because this is not right. And Michael donated to his campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Michael was unaware.
Yeah. Well, episodes 7 and 8 promise to be pretty good. I think it seems like things are it's just going to be very interesting to hear him. I've never heard Michael talk about the retirement before.
Yeah.
You know, guy made Space Jam. I guess we're going to get some good space. We might get some good, like, behind the scenes Space Jam stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
So that would be cool. But yeah, should be good. I hope we get more gambling stuff. That would be.
I feel like this was the gambling episode, though. I feel like that was it. That's all we're gonna get. I feel like
that's it. No more. What a bummer. All right. Well, yeah. That's gonna do it for this episode of the Last Dance recap. Hope you guys are enjoying it. It's very nice to be able to watch something that everyone else is also watching on Sunday night. Nice little replacement for the TNT games or whatever. And yeah, we'll be back later this week with more content, and next week with another recap.